before we get started, what is your name, sir?
Daniel Cahill.
Okay, if you can just hold on for one moment, the Honorable Miss Rittenhouse will conduct your hearing, sir. So just hold on to the phone.
Good afternoon, Mr. Cahill.
Yes.
Could you please, just for the record, please restate your full name and your ABC number.
Daniel Cahill, 40905.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for consideration for general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. And our information shows you became eligible for these on July 9th, 2007. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board, sir. And if we could ask you to sit up, the way you're sitting right now, all we can see is the top of your head. And we'd like to be able to see your face during this hearing. Thank you, sir. If you could look to your right, my left, at that end of the bench, at the very end is the Honorable Rick Quinones. Next to him, the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me, or in the middle, is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. Over on my other side here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. My name's Gail Rittenhouse. I will conduct the hearing today. I'll just start with a brief summary, kind of just some facts about the case, sir, and I'll just ask you periodically if I have this correct. It looks, are you 61 at this time, sir?
Yes.
61 years old? Okay. And serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder in the first degree, and he was paroled to a second crime, which was a two-year sentence for escape. And that has expired, and he is now back on the life sentence. Is that your understanding, sir?
Are you asking me?
Yes. I'm just making sure I have correct information.
Yeah.
Okay. The murder occurred on December 3rd, 1979. Mr. Cahill was approximately 22 years old. And he was convicted via plea and sentenced on April 14th, 1980. He did appeal his conviction, and that was... You did not appeal your conviction?
No.
Okay, let me look.
I pled guilty,
Okay, I thought I had an appeal in here. There is an appeal?
1980.
Perhaps an appeal was filed on your behalf then, sir.
Okay.
All right, so no, we just had record of it in the file. But it'll be on record that you are disputing that. Okay. And his criminal history is fairly limited. In 1974, I think there was a burglary, a criminal trespass, at least charges for those, and then the instant offense. He has a pretty considerable discipline history that includes 37 majors, but it's been a while. His last discipline was 10 years ago, February 4th, 09. And that was disobeying an order, and that did happen to be a major, but it was 10 years ago, so there's that. This Mr. Cahill's had 20 or more hearings before this board. He has been granted, as I mentioned earlier in the summary, parole to a consecutive sentence in June of 08. And he has also been granted home arrest in 2013, on January 3rd. And he absconded that time.
I didn't abscond.
What was the issue, sir? You were returned to custody.
My parole was violated for a dirty ring, but I didn't abscond.
Okay, so that's why I ask you. If I have the facts correct. Something I read suggested that you had absconded.
I don't know why.
Well, there's something in this packet. So you were revoked about, looks like about maybe 4 months after you were put on home arrest, sir? Was that correct?
No. This I was only out 27 days.
Let me look here.
I was released on January 3rd. My parole was violated on January 30th.
Okay, and you were just officially revoked on May 16th then. That's where, looking at your age record, that was probably the date of the official hearing, sir, when you were revoked. Okay. All right. And we have no letters of support for you today. Sir, do you have family or do you have friends out in the community who would support you?
No.
So are you an Arizona resident originally or?
No.
Where are you from?
Connecticut.
Are you from Connecticut? Okay. So you have no family or friends out here.
No.
Do you have family and friends there?
I have family. But I have friends. I don't, you know. I'm a murderer. I wouldn't want to just, you know.
Do you stay in touch with your family?
I did for 25 years or so, or 20 years or so, you know, so 27, 25 or so.
Okay, that's a long time. Do you, when's the last time you were in contact with your family?
About 15 years ago or so, I don't know. I've been in prison now for 4 years, so I don't know. It lasted for about 25 years.
Okay,
maybe
so you're in touch. Okay, all right. Okay, and your plans show that you plan to go out to V-Ray.
Yeah.
And do a construction type work. It says you have construction skills and carpentry and plumbing.
Yeah, I know stuff, you know.
Okay, see what.
I sent you a letter with certificates too. Did you get the letter?
We have.
Did you get?
I'm looking. Yeah, yep. I've got certificates. I've got forklift.
Okay.
I've got HVAC. Okay. Plumbing systems. So some of these things are things that you learned in prison, sir?
Well, the plumbing, I learned it. I knew plumbing from the streets, but I just went through the course because I knew it, so I could get the certificate.
Okay.
I never had a certificate out in the streets. It's just stuff that I was taught out there, before I came to prison.
But it could be skills that you could use when you get back out.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to talk some about the crime, sir, and what occurred that day. So why don't you just, can you just tell us what happened? What was going on in your life that day that made you do something like that?
Okay. I was coming from California. I had money, coming from California. I was on my way back to Connecticut, but I got robbed that night by somebody, some kids who picked me up hitchhiking. So I ended up wandering around all night in Phoenix, and I was cold night, and so I thought I needed some money to try to get back to Connecticut, and it was December 3rd, and I knew I was heading into some real cold, so I thought to break into some houses. That was the way I thought back in those days, you know, and so. I broke into three houses. I couldn't find any cash in the first two houses. And so in the third house, I saw a woman driving out away from the house. And so I thought, okay, there's nobody's home in that house, but let me check it out. So I went to the door and I rang the doorbell and knocked on the door, and then nobody answered. So I went around and I looked in and I couldn't see anybody. I tapped on some windows and nobody, you know, responded. And so I broke the window of the back bathroom window, and I crawled through that. make sure nobody was home, but before I started looking for any money, I wanted to make sure that I had an escape route in case somebody came home. So I went to the back doors, and they were patio doors. There was a wood block screwed into the floor to keep the door from opening. And I thought, you know, geez, I can't get out that way. So I go to the front door, you need the key from the inside to open the door. And while I'm still staring at that thing, I'm amazed to see this because I've never seen anything like that before. I hear a car drive up, and I start panicking because now I don't have a way out, you know, other than the way that I got in. And so I run to the front windows, and I'm looking out the door. Now, I should also say this. In the previous house that I had burglarized, I couldn't find any money in that house. But I had a hard time getting into that house because there was a screen. And I could take a rock and I could bust the window with a rock. But that screen I had a hard time cutting with the rock. And so when I got in the house, I found a little butt knife. Once I had searched the house and didn't find anything, I thought, okay, I'd use that little buck knife for the next house, so in case I use it to cut a screen. I didn't think of it as a weapon, okay? And I thought of it as a burglary tool. And so now I have this knife on me. So now I'm in this next house, and I'm under the window and I'm looking out, but I can't see the driveway, and I don't know if the car drove up into the driveway of this house or the driveway of the house next door. I got the knife out and I'm panicking, you know, and then the door opens and she's standing there and she starts yelling at me
So, Mr. Cahill, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do appreciate, it was a terrible thing that you described, but I do appreciate very much, and I'm sure other board members do too, the amount of detail you just provided us, because you may be surprised to know that many people cannot give that. And I believe your details coincide exactly with the written report that we have. So for that much, sir, I'm grateful to you. We do know that the victim was stabbed, and that's the part where you had just gotten to that part of the story, and that was the part that you said you have a difficult time describing or remembering even that part of the story.
I don't remember it. I really do not.
You don't
remember it. I do not. I remember swimming. I don't remember. It's like, look, I am not a violent person. I've never did violence to anybody other than getting into fist fights. Before that, I never had any violence. influence in my people, other than fistfights with my older brother. I consider myself I always have been. It's not that I consider myself. I am a very chivalrous person with women, and this thing eats at my soul. It's just for to look. The crimes that I've done in my life before, you know, before I came to prison, they were all burglaries. I never, ever wanted to confront anybody or to see any fear or anything in anybody's face. I never looked into anybody's face. I never robbed anybody personally. I could never do that, you know. The person that I was then, even then, as bad as I was as a burglar, as a criminal burglar, I wasn't a robber, if you understand the distinction. I don't know if you do, but in here they would understand.
So, Mr. Cagle, you say you're not a violent person, but that really contradicts. Now, I understand your prisons, which is an environment that few people even know what that means, and no one would know. But I just see so many disciplines in here. I see fighting, striking person, verbally threatening, throwing object, striking person, deliberately setting a fire, fighting, threatening, possessing a weapon, fighting, weapon, negligent death. What? How do you justify those?
Well, negligent death was somebody died in the cell with me, and that was one time, and the other time was a self-inflicted thing. That was to me what I had done to me. I got a letter from the victim's fiance, and I cut my throat.
So some of this, what are the fighting? What?
Hey, I'm a young man coming to prison. I've never been in prison before. I don't know. I for a long time, it's like people could see. They told me. I talked to people. You know, there's a difference. They could see the difference that I wasn't a convict. You know what I mean? Back then, I wasn't. I was like a fish in a small fish in a pond of sharks. I was like a sheep amongst the bulls, you see? And so, but my nature is not to be a sheep. It's just that I appeared and I conducted myself like a sheep. And so, when the wolf come to take advantage of me in some way, I fought. And so, but that makes me out to be too much of like an innocent. I'm not trying to act like that. What I'm saying is, and you know, people used to tell me that I looked like some kind of college kid, and I talked like with my New England accent, like I was some kind of educated dude or something, because I used to talk like, I talk different, you know, and because I was with the Connecticut accent, and people would misinterpret it like I was educator, you know, some smart guy or something, and not one of them, and maybe that brought extra attention towards me that I would, or I just everything that you will do.
So, Mr. Cahill, did something change? As I'm looking at your record, the last thing I would see that I see in your record that looks like anything that would be considered violence is in 1998. That was a throwing items. And that's the last one. The rest are disobeying order, there's some drug possession, there's some unauthorized smoking. Sir, what did something happen in 1998 to change you? How did you go 20 years without any violence? Yeah.
Well, that was... I turned 98, I would have turned to 22. I don't know, I'm getting into my,
you're 61.
My 30s or something, or 35 or something, I don't know, I just, you get, you're in prison for a while, you learn to stay out of it. You learn the consequences of your actions, you know, you go through all this time, and at first you're rebellious, you don't care, you're doing a life sentence, you think your life is over for 10 years, or whatever. That's the, to me, that's how I tell these new lifers that come in. You know, I tell them that, you know, I understand the first 10 years, you want to act out, you're crazy, you feel like your life is over, you're done. And then after 10 years, you start slowing down because you start thinking, well, maybe I'm not done. Maybe I have a shot at life, another life beyond this. But it takes a while for you to believe it. You tell yourself that, but you don't really believe it, you know. And then time goes along, and then you get to a certain age, and you just, these things that you did, you think to yourself, now you're kind of like ashamed of them. You know, you were young, and you did stupid things, and now you're just... And then you know how to deal with people better, you know how to talk to people. Like the guy that, I felt like I was going to get attacked just a minute ago. Not the last guy that you had in here, but the guy before that, he's a nut. He's a patient back and forth, rambling on for 20 minutes at me. I was acting like I was asleep. I thought he was going to attack me because he just got shot down at the parole board.
Well, Mr. Cahill, you've taken one step, I can tell you, that's in a positive direction, and that is that you haven't had any disciplinary since 2009. And at least for this voting board member, that is significant. So, let me see if my colleagues have any questions for you, sir.
Any questions?
Mr. Quinones has
Thank
a question
you.
For you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Cahill, I guess one of my concerns is, and you may very well put me at ease, but your grand home arrest, you said you went out that long, correct?
27 days.
So, and I understand, at least in context, what I think my colleague thought. It looks like that you had a home zone violation.
My brother came to Arizona and he came to visit me. And he drove me to the store. Now it's a one-way street. If you know downtown Phoenix, West Adams is a one-way street. So you have to drive down one way, and then to get to the store, then you have to drive all the way around and to get to back to Central, and then drive back down to West Adams. So it was a circuitous route, and so I wasn't supposed to do that. To be honest with you, I had peed the night before. I knew that I was going back to prison. And I figured, you know, my brother said, hey, can we go to the store and buy you some stuff? And I said, you know, even though I knew that I shouldn't be doing this, I knew I was going back to prison. I thought, yeah, it ain't no big deal, really, to just drive to the store here and go right back, you know, and they're gonna make a big deal about that, or, you know, whatever.
But Mr. Cahill, here's why I ask, and it's in good faith. It went bad for you quick, and I think there's also the marijuana and the spice issue.
Yes.
So should this board give you another opportunity to return to the community, what would you do different, Doc? Do you have a plan for really dealing with the community? Because that happens so fast. And this is not to say that I believe that you'll never succeed in the community. What's your plan?
First of all, I stated my plan in my letter to you. I wish to make this clear to you. I did 33 years. I got out, and I got out to my own apartment, and I wasn't a halfway house. I had no programming. I had nobody to help me. Nobody, no guidance, no. Nobody, I didn't have anything, you know, other than what I would ask the parole officer to do some suggestions, you know, about getting my Social Security and birth certificate and all that kind of stuff. But I managed to get myself a job, and, okay, you know, I didn't last long. But I went out there and I had nothing. And I know what, and I was on home rest and I couldn't go anywhere, of course. So I had no social life or anything. Okay, that's how it was, and that's how it will be again when I'll be on home rest and I'll have no social life. I understand that. The main thing is, I had no focus. I went out there after 33 years and I had no focus. I had nobody to. You need help after 33 years. I'm not from Arizona. I never lived a day in my life in Arizona. And then I got out there after 33 years and still managed to get myself a job and do all right for that 27 days. But I needed, what I really needed was some programming, some people. You know, that when a person gets out in my situation, they could talk to me. I needed to talk to somebody. I tried to, my brother come to see me, but that was a fluke. And I think he was just ethically obligated. He felt ethically obligated to come see me. But I needed somebody to talk to me, to all these things that I was going through in my life, mainly that I was trying to reconnect with my family, and it really wasn't, they were reluctant. You know, I freaked them out. I don't come from a family of criminals or that, you know, and to be a murderer, I mean, and my sister would come to see me and ask me weird questions like, and I know that she was molested as a kid by somebody, okay? And then she would ask me some kind of question. It wasn't overt, but it was like, I could tell that she was like, she was wondering if there was some sort of sexual thing involved in my murder. And these things would like, I'd get like real disturbed about it, you know? It would hurt me. She didn't know, and I'm trying to reconnect with her after 33 years, I freaked out. I'm a murderer, you know. I was never really home much, anyways. If you look at my past, I was in foster homes and stuff. So they didn't really know me, and so I'm some kind of stranger that they feel obligated because I'm their brother, but they don't really feel, they haven't grown with me, and so they don't really know me, and so, you know, and so I'm trying to reconnect with them, but that's not happening after 33 years. It's not happening, and I'm feeling very sad. I'm feeling very alone. And I needed somebody to talk to.
Okay, sir, I'm going to cut you off because I do appreciate you explaining the situation. I just was revisiting and asking in your own words. I mean, we wouldn't talk to you if it was just about reading the letters and making a decision. You know, we're trying to get to know you. So
yeah.
I was just getting at, well, you know, do you have a firm plan about trying this again?
Yeah, that's why that's the purpose of Libre.
Okay.
Or Oasis. You know, I could go to either one, but that's the purpose of this place. That was what I was getting. That was about at the end of what I was getting.
Well, thank you, Mr. Campbell. Thank you.
Other questions from board members? So, Mr. Campbell, do you have you been accepted at every way, or?
No, I haven't gotten a letter. I sent them, well, they sent me. I asked them to send me an application form. They sent it to me.
Right.
And I sent them the application form back. Now, I told them, you know, and it says, when is the date that you're going to be there?
Right.
Well, I can't put a date there, and so I explained that I'm going to parole board. I may never get parole again, and so I don't know the date. And so I haven't heard from them since.
Okay.
But it's the sort of thing.
We do have a letter in your packet that's dated 2015 from Church on the Street.
Right.
That just kind of explains the program. So obviously you've been asking.
Yeah, and there's another one from Mesa House, too.
Oh, okay. I don't think we got that one, but we do have the Church on the Street one.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. I have acceptance letters from a bunch of places. But, I mean, I would go to the parole board and have these acceptance places, and then I keep getting shot down, so that I don't... I feel like I'm trying to wolf. You understand?
Well, in general, what we understand is that once a letter is written, it's good, just unofficially, it's good for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it would be good to have those letters. I mean, that's generally what we operate under. So it would be good to have those letters. So because you've really, since you don't have any local family, and you know, no one is here today to represent you or support you, sir. You know, we want you to succeed. We don't want you to go out there and not have anybody to talk to, like you described last time. I can imagine that it must have been quite the experience being out there suddenly after being in prison all that time. So we want you to have a network around yourself, and it sounds like you're trying to establish that. But we just don't have, you know, there's no evidence of it, sir.
Well, there's not going to be, and...
You have a letter, though. You have a letter from an establishment accepting you.
Yeah.
We don't have that, sir. So,
well, yeah. Okay. I understand.
So, and then the other thing is just, and I can't remember, I think it might have been... I'm not sure who asked you the question, just about the last time you were out, and you did explain that you kind of felt lost and you needed somebody to talk to, and somehow you got involved with the marijuana and the spice last time. How did that happen?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, when I explained this before, when somebody asked me, they said I was making excuses.
Well, did
I just smoked marijuana, so
okay.
Can I just leave it at that?
Did you
explain it, then I'm making excuses.
What I'm asking is just, did a friend give it to you? Did you go out and seek it somewhere because you felt like you needed to escape? How did you come to have the marijuana that you smoked and the spice?
It came to me, through my brother.
Okay, so a friend or somebody gave it to you then?
My brother gave it to me.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. Okay, well, Mr. Campbell, unless board members have other questions for you, Mr. Campbell, we're coming up on the end of your hearing. We have no one else in the room, I don't think, that's here to support Mr. Campbell today. So, well, sir, you never know. Some of the halfway houses do actually send representatives. So I do want to give you the opportunity, sir, to make a final statement. We just ask that you not repeat something you've already told us. And is there anything else you'd like the board to consider today, sir?
Well, I have one thing that's been bugging me.
Well, what is that?
That I believe Mr. Neal or my might have said to me in the last parole board. It concerns me saying something to, I don't know who, about, I'll do it again, something like that. And I said, I didn't remember that, which I don't. But I know I do remember my mindset at that time. And I wanted to be executed. I didn't ask for a plea bargain. It just came to me, and the public defender told me to sign it, and I signed it. I took what the state wanted to give me. But that doesn't mean that I felt that it was justice. That's how I felt then. And so I may have said something to instigate more of a harsher sentence than a life sentence. I don't know. I can't remember, but I know my mindset and I know how my nature is. Now, how I felt then about my future is not how I feel now, but I know I remember how I felt then, so.
How do you feel now about your future?
Well, I like myself. I didn't like myself at then. I didn't like the person that I had become at that moment in time. But as far as how I see my future now, look, I've been to 10 parole boards or something since I violated, and at least four of them, they told me, you know, you only had one shot, so I'm gonna take them at their word. This is just a moot hearing, just to make me more of a retribution hearing. I see a mental retribution than an actual consideration of my parole. So be it. You know, at least four times, like I said, I've been told I only had that one shot. So why am I? And I've been to at least 10 parole boards since I've been back. So they say that the definition of insanity is to keep repeating the same process over and over again and expecting a different result. So why should I expect a different result?
Well, Mr. Kilgore, I can tell you that we have people who have been in prison long periods of time and have been released to the community 1, 2, 3, 4 times. And each time they're revoked, but when they're back for a period of time and they show good behavior in prison, they get another shot. So it's not true. Whoever said there's only one chance, that's absolutely not true.
That's a parole member that said that. That's
well,
a parole board member.
Then I disagree with that person, the members that were all independent, and the people that I see here are not people who believe, at least to my knowledge of my colleagues, are not people who believe you only get one shot. So, Mr. Cato, the board is going to go into discussion, and we do a discussion in public, so just remain online, remain silent, and we'll be back with you with a decision in just a moment. Okay, sir? Thank you. The board's now in discussion. Mr. Cato is certainly a very complex individual, and it's true, looking on his record, his crimes, as he said, were all burglaries, robbery, you know, there's a long string of those. And he freely acknowledges that and indicates he wasn't a violent individual, although when he got to prison, there were many violent acts. But as I understand, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, he had to be that way to be in prison. And I understand that. I very few people know what it's like to be in prison. He did have the recent, and I say recent, 2013 stint on home arrest, which did not end well. But I would say I would be open to having him go back to the community. I don't ever want him to think that this is his last chance. The only thing that I am having reservations about right now is not having a plan. Because to me, that is a way to fail, is not having a place to live. I mean, he has some job skills, which I think he'll be able to find some kind of work. But not having a place to go concerns me. And so I'll just open it up to other board members. But what I might suggest is that maybe we ask for 6 months' worth of effort at developing a solid plan, and then without any promises made, have to come back. But I'd be open to a board member input on that. Mr. Quinones?
I agree with you, and I just want to make sure that, because I've always listened to the discussion, that it's not the only thing, but ultimately we're talking about a place to live.
Right.
I know that he's wrote a letter and he talked about maybe different philosophies in dealing with the community, but I'm thinking place to live, like the real solid stuff. And I agree with you.
I think he could.
So I agree that I think it's regretful that he's had that attitude that this is a waste of time for him. I understand what he's saying. I think it's regretful that he was that way. I hope that maybe today will relieve some of that from him. But I agree. My only real concern about a release now is you can't release him homeless and without something specific from a halfway house. But I think he's also, as long as he's been in prison and as much help as he would probably need to adjust to society, that he might be a good idea for him to really look at the places that have a very tight program, and the faith-based ones, and Vivre is a good place, and like that. But to get something based off that he can tell him when he's released.
Right.
So I agree with yours on the 6 months and everything else like that. So.
Okay. Any thoughts, Mr. Johnson?
No? Maybe just a follow-up to all of these programs are not equal, so I would encourage him to look at the different options, because we hear the stories about certain halfway houses maybe having a lot of continuing drug and drugs or whatever, but something that is very, very has a solid base plate. Mm-hmm. Also, I meant to say this too, just for the sake of Mr. Cahill. I used to have this expression in my past professional life. It's policy, it's not personal. But in this case, I think you heard something that was personal and not policy. So someone gave an opinion, but it's not very personal. It's certainly not board policy. So I just think it's important to say. Thank you.
Just to go along with that, I mean, he's been here before this board, several times in the same situation. The question that he asks is, what can you do? He has no family, no relatives, or no support here. So when he got out, he had his own violation. So if he, it's the same thing. He has a good record in prison. If he wants to get out, then, he needs to work something out.
Dr. Any thoughts?
Well, he's going to have to make up his own mind. He's a smart person, not because he's from New England, he's from Connecticut. He's just a smart person. He just got to use some of that and grew up with a plan. He does not have a plan, and I think he really needs to come up with that plan. If he comes up with a plan, at least this would give the board something to consider. No guarantees with anything. No, we can't guarantee that no board member. We can't even guarantee he's going to be here 6 months from now, a year from now. That's a decision of the governor. But at least if he comes up with a plan, then we'll have something that whoever's on this board will have something to work on, to work from. And I think that that's the key at the moment for him to come up with a plan. And in addition to coming up with a plan to remain drug-free while he's still incarcerated, no violations or nothing of that nature, because that can also create some problems. So if he can, I think, because we can't tell him what to do, but I think some ideas have been suggested to him today that might be helpful.
All right. Thank you, board members. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion is that we deny general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest to Mr. Cahill without the one-year set-off, which means we'll be seeing him again in 6 months. And we prefer that he show up with a plan. And that's my motion.
Second.
second.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, second to Mr. Johnson, agreed, Dr. Wright, Mr. New, and Mr. Quinones. Release type denied is general parole, absolute discharge, and home arrest. Reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, and this is serious bodily injury, prior criminal history because of the repeat and repeat offender, but just continued burglaries and et cetera. I'm definitely not checking for institutional behavior because he needs to keep it up, what he's doing right now. Keep it up. No recent discipline. I'm not checking history of assaultive behavior because he is not that off. He's not doing that. For some years, he hasn't had any violence. But I am going to check for a no-release plan because we really need a place on the record. And I'm going to check no family or community support because some of that will come with when if he's got a place to go, he will have that support. Any other reasons that the board members wish to add? Okay. Okay, back to you, Mr. Cagle. You heard the board's discussion. We just we denied your application today, but we will see you again in 6 months. And we would like to, this is not a guarantee that this will do it, you know, in 6 months. But we need to have a place where we're going to go. And you know that you need structure. So work with your CO3, find a place that offers some structure. So you've got somebody to talk to when you feel like you need to talk to somebody. There's somebody there. So there are good many of them that do that, some of the faith-based ones. Have your CO3 look at some of the possibilities for you. Okay, sir?
Okay.
So thank you for participating in your hearing today. Your hearing's over, and if you'd let the CO3 know that you're finished, and just lay the phone down rather than hang it up.
I think I'm the last one.
Oh, well, maybe if you could just let him know so we could say bye to him.
Okay, no, I'm not the last one. I'm sorry.
You've got some more. Okay, sir. Thank you, and you too. Thank you, sir.
Okay.